Hello, everyone. Welcome to Living the Breakthrough, T1D Stories, where we have conversations with people who break through the challenges of living with T1D to achieve whatever they want in life, both big and small. My name is Adrian Gonzalez, and I'm a board member with the Greater New England chapter of Breakthrough T1D. And my guest today is Julianne O'Connell, who is a clinical trial specialist at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. And she is also the vice chair of events for the Breakthrough T1D Young Leadership Committee for the Greater New England chapter. Now, Julianne and I were at the Breakthrough T1D Community Summit in Boston recently. You know, I was there recruiting new riders for the Breakthrough T1D rides, and she was there representing the Young Leadership Committee. And we started talking, and someone mentioned this program to her, and she asked, "How can I be on it?" And I said, "Consider yourself invited." And so here we are. So Julianne, welcome to the program.
I'm so excited. Thank you so much for having me, Adrian. Someone said, "Hey, he runs a podcast." And I think you saw my eyes go, "Oh." And you made
Yeah,
it very easy. You were like, "Want to be on it?" And I was like, "Wow, I didn't even have to ask." And I was like, "I, yes."
well, this is great. You know, we always, you know, yeah, the main goal of this program is really to get folks to kind of share their story, share their experience, and you know, I know you've got, you know, some great input, you know, to share with us. So I really appreciate you, you know, making the time to kind of share your story with us. So, well, let's get started. I mean, and we always get started the same way, which is at the beginning, right? And so let's start at the beginning of your T1D story. I mean, when did you get diagnosed with type 1 diabetes? You know, what were some of the symptoms that either you or your parents noticed that led to the diagnosis?
Yeah, it was not pretty remarkable on my end, unfortunately. So I was 14 months old. Very, very, very young. First kid too. So I give my parents major, major props for A, learning how to become new parents, and then also then having to learn how to be new parents to a child with type 1 diabetes. It wasn't anything super remarkable from what I have heard stories told of and understood. I think a lot of people, start this now. We were at a regular primary care checkup, or and they saw some levels and they were like, "You need to go to the hospital like now." High levels of glucose in the urine, high A1C. I think it was, high glucose levels, all of that. So shipped us off right to Children's. In Boston, which is actually right down the street from where I work. So I've been in the Longwood medical area in Boston for a really, really long time. And very kind of just, I guess, earth shattering could probably be the only way that you can describe it. Apparently I was so dehydrated, like none of the nurses could find a vein to start getting IV access and all of that stuff. And one doctor came in, his name was Dr. Alejandro, and according to my mother, came in with his white coat, found the vein, popped it in, patted me on the head, and walked. And they never saw him again. So I'm sure he was like, a resident or a fellow or something like that. But it really was just kind of something. After that, they had to then, adapt to it.
Was there any history of it in your family, or were you the kind of the first one that you know, in the family?
Zero history. And my grandfather is huge into, genealogy. We've tried to go back and look for medical records and things like that, but nothing that we ever would have thought would be there. There's always kind of type 2 and type 1. That's not the time or place, but even no history of type 2 diabetes. So zero kind of like indication in regards to it. So, it really just kind of came out of the blue. Grew up. And then so then it was just, grew up and adapted to it. A lot of life with it has just been trying to, how do you adapt to it now that you've got this kind of like new normal that you need to go into. So not only do you have to, potty train a child, you have to potty train a child with type 1 diabetes, and you have to send a child to preschool and socially interact, and now you gotta do it with type 1 diabetes. We started on insulin vials and injections, always had a combination of, NPH, Humulin R, Humulin N. That was what we, and that was it. So, and they kind of did that and had to work with my doctors, and try and figure out the best course of it. dive that into elementary school. You know, if I was ever high, and I think this is a great spot to shout out to elementary school nurses. That is a job that I can't even fathom. I adore my elementary school nurse. She was fantastic. She really understood, really tried to, you know, let me be independent, but also like make sure I was still living and breathing at the end of the day, and then take care of an entire school of children as well. So, but you know, I couldn't do any of those things myself. So that was kind of, you know, once my parents, I feel like it was always kind of a, you know, once we finally got into a routine, okay, well, now what are we going to do in school? Wasn't, you know, old enough to do finger pricks by myself, wasn't old enough to give insulin injections by myself. So, you know, was on a very strict snack schedule, very strict, like, you know, to make sure that things would run normally. And mind you, this was before continuous glucose monitors. So we were running on, you know, finger pricks. And God forbid, if the blood sugar was high, the nurse was, all right, laps around the gym, go, give me 10. Whether I felt like it or not. So it was definitely an adjustment. You know, in regard, and I think that I can't even, there's brief things I'm trying to remember, you know, always like, hey, my legs feel wobbly, or I don't feel well. And that's not just, is my kid coming down with the flu? It's like, no, where is her blood sugar level at? You know, my mom will tell you that there were times, you know, she sees me. We had a long hallway growing up, and I was an early walker. I think I started walking at like 9 or 10 months. So this was even pre-diagnosis. And she kind of had a feeling something was up, because there was one day where I was walking like into the wall, like a zigzag. So she's like, something's not right. So again, really is also in a testament to parents of, you know, how well you know your kid.
Right.
So she was kind of able to pick up on that. But it was really kind of crazy. But you know, I'm still here, which is great. So we made it through. I'm sure, I don't, you know, you've got your own diagnostic story, and I always love hearing about, you know, other people's experiences, because it is something that I just don't remember. This has always been something that I've kind of had to adapt to deal with. So I can imagine, you know, I know that you've, you know, shared with me, and you've shared with the community, that your daughter was diagnosed. And I know that that was probably definitely an adjustment for you guys. I'm curious how you felt, and did you know, did you see any kind of, you know, symptoms, signs that there's something just not right, I guess is the appropriate word.
Yeah, well, our daughter Hannah was diagnosed at age 11, so certainly much later than you were. So 14 months, obviously, you really have no memory of life without diabetes, because basically you've lived your entire life with it,
Right.
and your parents definitely had to, take primary responsibility, for your well-being, for many years. With Hannah at 11, and I totally resonate with what you said about, the school nurses. So she was just entering middle school at that point. And now she was old enough, and she really wanted to take ownership of it. So she was able to, at age 11, you're kind of old enough now to, give yourself injections or
Right.
keep track, or at least understand, where you need to be and so forth. But still, she needed to be in the school setting. She needed to be, supervised and do this within the observation of the school nurse. And she loved, just like you, she loved her nurses at the middle school. And it was probably one of our favorite times of the day, when she had to go there to kind of give herself a bolus right before lunch, or if she was low, to go to the office. So I don't think she minded too much, whenever she was low or too high, and she had to go to the nurse's office, because they ended up developing a strong relationship, over that time. But I think I think that's the thing about this disease, right? Either you get diagnosed at your age, right, at 14 months or even younger. So this is like you've lived essentially your entire life with it and have no memory of that. And then you have folks like my daughter who, early teens, preteen, early teens or so. And then we have folks that we had one of our guests here who was diagnosed at 30, right? So it's all different, time frames. But yeah, no matter what age, I mean, particularly for me and my wife, when our daughter was diagnosed, again, it was just, no history in our family either, no knowledge of what even type 1 diabetes was. And so we also had to go up, along with our daughter, go up the learning curve and understand what this all meant and what the new normal was going to be, and so forth. So it is kind of at that first period, it's, those first few days and weeks, it's kind of earth shattering for, and your whole world
Absolutely,
gets
yeah.
turned upside down. And then, over time, you recognize that, okay, no one wanted this to happen, but it's happened. And
Right.
now how are we going to react to it? How are we going to live and move forward with it?
Yeah.
Now you mentioned, which kind of brings me to my next question. I mean, you talked about how you kind of started out with the vials and the injections. And so when it comes to managing diabetes, I mean, there really is no one size fits all approach, right? I mean, some people prefer to use injection pens or vials, while others still use an insulin pump. Some people prefer to use a glucose meter and continue to prick their fingers to test their blood glucose, while others use a continuous glucose monitor. I mean, how do you currently manage your diabetes, and how has your approach changed, over the years? And and if so, why?
Yeah, I think it's, I mean, everyone talks about the technology that comes out, and a big thing that I always like to say, involved in especially with clinical research, you're trying to generalize the most individualistic disease. And you want to make, general ideas, especially in regards to symptoms. We know what low symptoms are like, shaky legs is one of them, hunger, things like that. And I remember going through the whole checklist with my nurse educator of like, what do you feel when you're high versus when you're low? I currently use insulin pens. But I have been on almost every single range under the sun. Started with the vials and the needles, kind of trying to gain that independence as, an 11-year-old, you're in middle school, you're way too cool for your parents, and you're like, I'm in middle school now. So actually we did go on an insulin pump at that time, because it was just, and I remember going through all of the teachings with that. I think it's I can't remember exactly what it was so long ago, but and then weirdly enough, I think there's a whole mental health component that I would love to talk about as we dive further into this, but really kind of being ready and letting the parents, release that control of watching their kid, and watching their kid not only become a teenager, but now a teenager with diabetes. There can be some serious health repercussions if it's not taken care of. So, weirdly enough, I think when I was on my insulin pump, I think I went too far into the independence. My A1Cs skyrocketed when I was on it. I was forgetting boluses all the time, because it was just there. And it was almost like, aside from the fact that it was clipped onto your body, you really didn't know that it was there. And, I did not have any friends growing up. I was the only one, I think, in my town until at least sixth or seventh grade. So it wasn't super prominent. So, we would go to the doctor's appointments and stuff, but that's really when I would focus on it, because I just wanted to be a normal kid. So it probably wasn't until maybe my junior year of high school, and I was just in tears because I could just not get my A1C like down. I always kind of had this feeling that I was disappointing people, if my A1C wasn't locked in, if my blood sugars were through the roof. Like, you go and you see it, and you actually sit down and look at the numbers, and you're just like, oh my God, and wreaks all havoc on your brain. So that's when we actually switched back to insulin pens, and it was nice because it was an actual physical reminder that I needed to do that. And it was CGMs, I think, had just started coming out, but again, I did not want yet another thing on my body. So I had the insulin pump, and it's like, now I got to put another thing. And mind you, this was when they were first coming out. I think it was the G4. I could be exaggerating. It was huge. And it wasn't necessarily like huge in length, but it stuck out. So there were always kinds of, the worries of getting hit on the door, or someone, ripping it off by accident. I was a very competitive athlete growing up. That was kind of, I fell in love with sports, and my parents were like, you can be like any other kid. We just got to do it a little differently. So, you're strangling for the ball, or you're going for a jump ball in basketball. And this actually happened. Someone ripped my insulin pump out as I was playing. And so now, not only that, I have to, now I'm not getting insulin in my body. I'm actively playing in a game right now. And it's like, okay, so now what? So it's all those things that you worry about when you're a kid that you really don't, you just don't want to deal with it, at least, especially in the teenage years. And I think that that's, I'm hoping, a common trend that we see in the teenage years. That was at least my teenage experience. So I went strictly no tech for many, many years. I just regularly started using a continuous glucose monitor, I think 2 years ago. My continuous glucose monitor journey is, it's a little crazy. I was, how do I relinquish now? So now transitioning from that period of parents relinquishing control of managing their kids' diabetes and counting the carbs and doing the insulin, you have to bring that over to the child in with diabetes. And now that child needs to learn how to balance all of that. And now they need to relinquish control to a device after they've been, taught and trained to know their body better. No way. And I would say that I was like, there is no way this tiny little machine knows my body better than me. And it would, I definitely think there was some bias because I was very hesitant. Also made me seem like I couldn't do it on my own, which is a wild concept in and of itself. Like you can't do diabetes alone. I think we've definitely learned that as we've gone on. But so it almost seemed like I was failing if I was using more technology. So I was adamant on not using it. But I finally, got it into my head that these were just tools to help me. So once I finally got that onto it, I started using a continuous glucose monitor regularly. I still listen to my body very well. I know that there's many people out there who have struggled with like hypoglycemia unawareness. 1,000% have dealt with that. So the CGM has actually helped me with that to re kind of retrain my body to recognize my low symptoms, because I think those can definitely change over a period of time too. So it's the journey has been long and winding, and it's not straight. And I know that that's common for just life in general. But I think using that is that's kind of how I have found my peace. So I do use my continuous glucose monitor. Yes, it can be off. It's not always 110% accurate. And I mean off by like 100 points off, which is kind of nutty. Yes, it does typically happen within the first like 2 to 3 days, which I know is like the body and the algorithm trying to reconnect itself. And I know it's not always going to be perfect because, as everyone knows, it doesn't sit in the blood. It sits in the interstitial tissue. So with that said, if I am feeling off because I know my symptoms for whether it's high or low, and my Dexcom doesn't seem like it's right, I will do a finger stick and I will calibrate my Dexcom at least once or twice a day, sometimes 3 times. But I was trained, get up, finger stick. Middle of the day at school, finger sticks, go throughout the day. Anytime you get behind the wheel of a car was always, as driving is a whole component too, that growing up was crazy. So someone who's grown up with almost the bare bones, like minimum of technology, it is incredibly helpful, and it does take some of like the mental load off of what I think is part of diabetes. But I have never been able to completely fully rely on it. And I'm kind of grateful for that because it just helps me stay in tune with my body and what I know. So
Yeah,
it's been a journey for
no,
sure.
I think that that's a great point too, because I think that one of the dangers with technology is that you can become so overly dependent on it that that if you haven't practiced those basic skills of testing your blood, multiple times a day, or even just having syringes with you and a vial with you in case your pump fails, because the pump will fail, right? At some point, you're
Absolutely.
gonna have a
Yeah.
situation where, it's gonna fail, or it's gonna get ripped off of you, playing sports, or something's gonna happen, and you're gonna have to go back to quote unquote manual mode, if you will, or back to,
Yeah.
non-technology mode. And if you haven't done it in a while, or you really never did it, then you kind of lose that practice. You lose that knowledge. My daughter's case, I know she did, she started off with pens. She was on that for a long time. She tried a continuous glucose monitor, She did it for about a week. This was a going back many years. Hated it. Didn't think it was accurate at all. Was much like you said, I know my body better. I know that the blood stick is going to be the most accurate. And she didn't want to use a continuous glucose monitor. But then eventually, she's also an athlete. Eventually, she went on the Omnipod, and then ultimately she did try give the continuous glucose monitor, another try, and now she's on the kind of the closed loop system. But I think your story is very similar, even to her, right? You go through a journey at different stages in life, depending on, whether you're a little kid versus now you're playing sports. That might be a different phase. Or hey, you know what? Whatever you're doing is not quite working out. So, in terms of managing your A1Cs as effectively as possible, or whatever it is. And so it might be time to switch it up and try that something different.
And I think that that's something that I definitely encourage, if there's ever parents listening and something like that, you don't have to stick with one thing all the time. It is okay to switch it up. I think it also look at your lifestyle. Look at, what does your kid like to do? If your kid, loves art and isn't super active, then a pump could be really good for them. If your kid is playing contact sports like lacrosse, rugby, football, like runners also have a huge different thing too. It all just depends on kind of, what is going to work for you. And I'm hoping that that can kind of be the overall takeaway, with our conversation that we have today, is you have to do what is ultimately best for you and your family. And because there's, which is so great, there's so much information out there now. It's fantastic. Like the research that we've done in regards to lifestyles, diet, all those types of things. Like it's really great to see all of that, but you can almost get boggled down with it, and you can get even more stressed out, I think, if you don't, take a step back and it's like, what works for our family? What works for the kid too? The person living with type 1 diabetes as well. I think I always carry my glucometer everywhere with me. I know that that's kind of always like my backup. I think that there's a lot of things that you kind of have to focus on too, is, diet as well. And I think that that plays a huge part, like, into the technology, because if you're eating like a very heavily carb diet, your blood sugar is just going to go up and down, and then you're giving even more injections that you may not need. You could be giving more insulin through the pump. There's all these different types of things that you can play that play into diabetes and play into effect. But, I think just trying to kind of see what is going to work best for you. And you can obviously ask your provider questions. I think a lot of people do try, and because they've seen it work, right? They've seen the A1Cs go lower, especially with like the closed loop system. But if you've got someone who is like, no, like I need that physical reminder, and they can still keep their A1C at a safe level, then that's what works for them. So it's
Right.
all dependent. There's really no right or wrong answer, is the bottom line.
Exactly. Yeah. And then, like you just said, what works today might be, what's the right solution today might be, different, down the road. So
Yeah.
I'm gonna move switch topics here to something that you brought up before, and that's the mental health aspect of all this. I mean, so much of the focus of T1D is on the physical side of it, right? The immune system, the beta cells in the pancreas, blood glucose levels, A1C, as you were bringing on, we were just talking about, and so on. But when you're living with a chronic disease, especially one that you have to deal with, every day, right? Whether whenever you eat, whenever you exercise, or go away on a trip, et cetera. I mean, there's a mental health aspect, to it too. I mean, can you share, I mean, your experience, or maybe some words of advice or lessons learned about the mental impacts of having type 1 diabetes?
Oh yeah, Adrian, how long do we have? No, I think I would like to think that it's changing. Girl, I and this is, my personal experience, of course. So, growing up, it is no one ever wants to be the odd kid out, right? No one ever everyone just wants to blend in, just wants to hang out. And, I think it's kind of, but diabetes changes all of that. when you have diabetes, you can't be that spontaneous person. Let's go to Mexico tomorrow. You can't. You need letters to get through customs. You need how much supplies do I need to bring? All of that stuff. I think it kind of falls into the, plan for the worst, but hope for the best kind of a situation. At least for me, you really kind of have to plan, like, if everything goes to hell, do I have a plan and am I going to keep myself safe? And so that for me was, juice boxes, like a pack of juice boxes, and always having a low snack in my bag. If I had multiple bags for multiple sports, making sure that there was something in there that I was going to eat in case it happened. Always meant doing, everyone does their, keys, phone, wallet. Well, mine is keys, phone, wallet, insulin. So there's always kind of making sure that you have enough of that and kind of always keeping in that mental component of like, okay, well, how many test strips do I have left? Like, how, where are we stopping? Are we going to be like, what is, if you're going on a trip somewhere, school field trips, things like that. Like, okay, well, what food are they going to have? Like, if it's all carbs, like, okay, maybe I need to bring, another extra vial of insulin. Maybe I bring, a couple of other extra pods. Like, is my pod going to work? If it doesn't work, do I have a, so it's just, you can hear me already, right? How much mental toll that's going on. And that's just for one trip, let alone like in the course of a day.
Right. And then if you're like me, like my wife and I, particularly me, I was always on top of my daughter. Well, do you have enough pods with you? Do you have enough insulin? Did you forget this? Did you bring that? Did you, there could be a little bit of that as well. So it's not only you going through that mental stuff, but maybe your parents, if you're on the younger side, right?
Yeah, I mean,
Following up on you or asking you all these questions about it too. I can, I know that there were times where my daughter would just say, stop, I've got it,
yeah,
I've already thought
you
about
get
this.
very frustrated because again, it's that independence piece, right? You not only are now trying to, raise a teenager to think independently, but you're now trying to raise a teenager with type 1 diabetes. And unfortunately, that is the only way that I think that you can do it. But it's one of those things of just like feeling different, but different is good. And I would like to think that I think that that, has changed a little bit. I never was told no because of my diabetes. Sleepaway camp at 11 years old looked very different for people who didn't have diabetes. The nurse needed to make sure that not only I had my supplies, but that she had supplies. That meant that something as simple as not being able to sleep on the top bunk. I couldn't sleep on the top bunk. I had to sleep on the bunk next to the door so that she didn't disrupt everybody in case I did have, a low blood sugar. And yeah, it meant that, the teacher was waking me up in the middle of the night to do a blood sugar check because she didn't know about it. And then it was, kind of, okay, well, my blood sugar is 90, but, again, before CGMs, is it 90 and dropping? Is it 90 and steady? Is it 90 and increasing? So, it's all of those different types of things where you just don't want to feel that way. But I think that if we can keep reframing the story that different doesn't mean bad, then that's like also another big takeaway that I want people to understand. And I also, parents of children who have type 1 diabetes, they can do anything. And, I think that's where the technology part plays into it. But I studied abroad in Ireland and I traveled to all the different countries and it was absolutely incredible. Now that meant, yes, I had to pack 4 months worth of supplies. I'm 95% certain, if I can remember correctly, I had a checked bag just dedicated to diabetes supplies. But it was because it's, healthcare is different everywhere. And, I wanted to make sure that I had enough. Worst case scenario, stuff could have gotten shipped, but then you're dealing with customs and whatever. So it's those additional steps that people need to think about. And I think that, something that is also super important is when finding out when you are willing to accept that you are different and seeing that as a positive, as a superpower. And, it seems kind of dramatic, but at the same time, it is. It makes you super, super. People wouldn't think about these things. People, you can definitely say as a diabetic, you have extreme attention to detail and you are always prepared. Those are just things that you have to learn very quickly. And I think once that those things are accepted and you've accepted this is something I'm going to have and this is what I'm going to do, then you can start kind of, building that community. I think that, that was kind of one of my biggest regrets is I really never went to any kind of diabetes camp because it was just part of life. It was just, what we had. But, I did eventually find my community, through Breakthrough T1D, through the Joslin Diabetes Center, and I finally, started finding diabetics everywhere, and they're not difficult to find, especially with the continuous glucose monitors nowadays. But it's always fun when you're out at dinner and you just kind of raise your arm up, and then everyone goes, "Yeah." So it's one of those things that it's just, it's so much, and I just never want people to think that you are, bad at diabetes, that you can't ask for help, like. I think that's also my other big thing too is like, making sure that even if you don't have people who do have diabetes who just get it, people who are willing to help you. What do you need? What can I get you? If I forgot my snacks, do you have something I can grab right now? No, but let me go get you like a Gatorade or something. 'Cause if you're having like a low episode, like you sometimes can't walk. So having the people who are like, yeah, we got you. We know this is something you have, but we're gonna also just treat you like any other person too, and just the kind of acknowledging that that's there. I think it can be really, it a diabetes can be anxiety producing, and you can kind of get into those states. There are days, oh my God, Adrian, I want to scream into a pillow, and I'm just like, why is this happening to me? Like, there's always just in those days are gonna happen, and I'll be very candid about that. But you kind of. I think it's important to allow yourself to feel those emotions too, and especially for the parents who may be dealing with a new diagnosis, or you're that person who's had it for over 30 years and you're just like, I am just like burnt out. Diabetes burnout is huge. From you can see all the mental decisions that you have to make. It's just always this additional piece. But we can do it. And it's really great because with the yeah, I remember that one of my childhood best friends, we were in every single class together growing up in elementary school. And we stayed in touch throughout middle school and high school. And he writes in my high school yearbook, he goes, "Can't believe we've been through it all together." He goes, "I'm going to find a cure for diabetes." And that was his goal when he graduated high school. Can I tell you what he does now? He's currently an engineer at Vertex working on a cure for diabetes, which is kind of crazy. So you're not alone with the diabetes. It can certainly seem that way. Some days you just feel like your brain is just clogged, for a better word. But the clouds will clear. It will be okay. You just kind of got to take everything one day at a time,
I always say, it's always so hard. It's hard enough, growing up, right? The teenage years, high school years, right? I mean, there's movies made about, all the challenges in the high school years as an example, and then college, and of course, being a young adult as well, right? You're just starting your career, and maybe starting relationships and so forth. And it's just hard enough without having this extra, thing to think about and worry about, and that not only affects you physically but also mentally as well. But to your point, I mean, I think that how you face it, how you react to it is very important. Number one, having that support structure, where whether it's friends. I know with my daughter, all her friends, they once she got diagnosed, they understood what it was. I mean, she taught them like, okay, this is what it is, and we wanted her friends to recognize the signs of if she was going low, so that they knew, to get her help in case she wasn't able to advocate for herself. But other than that, I mean, her friends didn't treat her any differently at all, which I think was great. They didn't view her as different. They included her in everything else. I think that's a lot of the fear, perhaps, that some kids might have, is that, hey, now maybe because of this, I might be treated differently, or maybe people might look at me, differently, and so forth. And like you said, you don't want to stick out necessarily. You want to be just like everybody else. But I think in some ways, if you're able to turn it, I love the way you said it. If you're able to turn this into a superpower, and it sounds like you've done that. I know my daughter in many different ways has done that as well. I think it's very empowering and very, I mean, getting the disease in itself is life changing, but being able to take that perspective is life changing as well.
You know, there's a, I know it sounds like you want to, we can jump to the next part, but you know, it's, they talk about people first language, right? And I think that that is super important. You know, just keep, you are a person living with diabetes. You are not just a diabetic. You know, you are, you know, I, if you could rattle, you know, I was an athlete, you know, I'm a sister, I'm a daughter, I'm a friend, I'm a, you know, you all these different, you know, parts that, you know, that you are, and you have all of these other qualities and things that keep you get just keep you have to keep reminding yourself of that, that you are not just your disease. And you know, I think it like I said, it can be very tough, but you know, it's one of those things where it does build that mental toughness. It does, you're kind of facing adversity almost every single day, especially, and not even that, you are adversing against yourself. This is, you know, your body is like, hey, we're just not, we're not going to cooperate today. And I think that that's really difficult to try and be able to kind of grasp, but you know, you keep putting one foot in front of the other, and you just, you know, it's, it, you, the acceptance journey, I think, is the most important part. And I wish I could say, like, when was the official moment that I finally accepted that I have diabetes? I don't think that there's, you know, one distinct moment, but you know, there are going to be days where you feel like you were at rock bottom, and you know, you just kind of, you know, I always tell everybody, I just, I do it. I take a deep breath in and a deep breath out, and I go, all right, here we go, because I'm never going to let diabetes win. And when you kind of get into that headspace, you are letting it win. So you know, you are stronger, you are more than your disease, and you are stronger than your disease. And it's always, you know, it's really great that, you know, through these conversations that, you know, you kind of go, you know, you support and talk through, like, it's very, it is very therapeutic. You do feel heard, which I think is like the most important piece too. So
Yeah, I think what
definitely
I've heard the
know
most
what
is, you know, from folks, I mean, it really, you know, we use the word resilient a lot these days,
you're
but I think that's so true for folks. I mean, I see that in my own daughter. You know, it just makes you a much more resilient, you know, person because you know, particularly if you've had this for a long time, you know, you just become more accustomed to having to deal with setbacks, you know,
That's a
deal
really good word.
with
Yeah, you do.
disappointments and so forth, because you've had to do it all your life, right? Or you've had to do it all the
Right.
time you know, on a day-to-day basis. So
Yeah.
you're better equipped to kind of handle some of these adversities that inevitably, you know, come your way just in everyday life.
Yeah.
So I want to shift gears now and just, I mean, I mentioned early on during the introduction that you're involved with the Greater New England chapter of Breakthrough T1D, as I am, as the vice chair of events for the Young Leadership Committee. So for people who might be familiar with this committee, I mean, what's it all about? And, you know, more broadly, I mean, what made you get involved with Breakthrough T1D?
Totally. Yeah. So, Young Leadership Committee. So it's the, so we, for, on, you know, officially known as the YLC, for all young professionals, Greater New England, predominantly in the city of Boston. And we are, you know, ages, we, you know, 20, 23 to 40. If you are a working young professional, you can be in the YLC. And so, you know, we are kind of, we form that sense of community. You know, we do put on events where we can go and grab a coffee, or we can, you know, again, 21 and up, we can go to a restaurant and grab a drink, and we can just say, I had the worst diabetes days today. It's like, oh, me too. And then we can share these stories, and it fosters that kind of, you know, mental health piece where you do feel like you're not alone. We definitely are planning more events to kind of start fundraising to donate to Breakthrough T1D because of everything that it does. I really enough found out about this. I worked for the Joslin Diabetes Center doing clinical research for many, many years, and I think that it was kind of nice to come home to. But you know, sitting in the waiting room and I'm talking to this patient, and I was just telling her, I was like, dang, I really wish that there was a way to like get more involved, because I was 23 at the time and I had just moved into the city and I didn't really know a ton of people, because everyone's kind of figured, she goes, you should join the YLC, come meet us for a drink. And it was so great, it was awesome. And then, you know, then the pandemic hit, and then everything went to the wayside. So you know, finally, once all that came back, they started hosting events again, and that's when I was trying to, you know, like, oh, this is really great, but I really want to be more involved. I think there's a lot more that we can do. So, you know, kind of, you know, applied, and they accepted me as the vice chair. So I'm learning from a lot of really cool people, getting to hear a lot of different T1D stories in regards to that. Shout out to our president, Ryan Stuebe, and our chair of events, Monica. They've been really great people for me to kind of learn from and work with. Obviously, Breakthrough had a name change a couple years ago. It was formerly, the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, or JDRF. And, we, like many people, did the Walk to Cure Diabetes. That was kind of our one big thing for it. And my family was always there, always at the Hatch Shell, really developed a community of people who would donate to kind of like, work through with us, work through this with us. I'll mention that, my family consists of my mother, my dad, and I've got two younger siblings, actually, a brother and a sister. So they were always there, always supporting aunts, uncles, grandparents, whole nine yards. And so we were really involved in that for a very, very long time. And then, adolescence rolls around, your priorities change, which is totally fine. We've talked about that, but once you kind of get into that college phase and that young adult phase and you kind of go through that acceptance piece, you're like, all right, it kind of is like a thank you to the parents and to the people who have been with me on this journey for so long. What can I start doing now? Now that ownership that we talked about kind of comes back in. Like, okay, there's all these people who have been fighting for me for so long and advocating and all this stuff. What can I do? And so, I really had heard about the YLC, the pandemic came. And then when I hit my 26th year of having diabetes, I was like, we got to do something. I was like, this is so Boston Marathon rolls around, of course, every year on the same day. And so I kind of jumped back into it. I applied to be on the marathon team for JDRF. And it was great. I got to run, for JDRF to, all the money to give back to the organization that has been through with me for so long. And that was really kind of how I got to know many of the people back in through Breakthrough. And I think this is probably just the craziest thing that I can think of was on the day on Marathon Monday, it was exactly 26 years and 2 months to the day of when I had been diagnosed.
Wow.
So I got to run 26.2 for 26.2. Which was a huge milestone for me. Of course, like running a marathon is just absolutely, crazy in and of itself. But to be able to run for an organization who has truly not stopped, like, is always trying to, look for a cure, always putting on community events, like the amount of growth that I have seen, when we got to talk about this at the summit, I think, like, oh my God, I wish that half that stuff had been there when I was growing up. Because I think that, when we talk about technology, what we're doing right now, I don't think webcams existed. I wasn't on webcams. I don't, so it's really great to see people being able to connect from all over with these technology pieces. And so, running the marathon was really like, this is it. I was like, I can't give this up. I was like, this is everything that I needed. And so that's kind of how we came back into Breakthrough. The people that I met on my team were phenomenal. Many of them have friends and family on the board, and so we are always looking for new members. I'm happy to share any kind of information about that if people want to join, whoever's listening in. We're a really fun group of people. We're really trying to do a lot this year. We're really excited to kind of jump back into things. But yeah, the Breakthrough T1D slash JDRF journey has been near and dear to my heart, and it's, I think it's kind of like I said, it's that ownership piece. Now I finally feel it's like, all right, I've got it. I'm in. What can I keep doing now as an adult to kind of give back, to thank all those people for continuously donating, for continuously supporting? It's a really great group. It's a great organization, as you obviously, as you know. So it's just, there's no other words I can say. I'm gonna start crying,
Well,
but.
I'll definitely, I know I got the ball rolling on getting my daughter introduced to you, and
Yeah.
hopefully she'll get involved as well as she learns more. And wow, marathon, that's phenomenal. I mean, I think,
You.
what better way? You were talking about how, obviously type 1 diabetes doesn't stop you or prevent you from doing anything. I think, doing a marathon is kind of a physical manifestation of that, right? If you can run a marathon, again, another example of something that in and of itself, running a marathon and training for it and all the time and commitment and ups and downs that go along with just being able to run 26.2 miles is hard enough without type 1 diabetes now, right? Now you have to
Crazy.
manage your highs or lows during the run and practice sessions and everything else. And to be able to do that,
Yeah.
successfully is
It's really,
it's
yeah, that
great.
was, I think, you know, it was, that was probably my pivotal moment too. That's kind of thing when I really locked in. It was like, okay, because, you know, it's like you said, marathon training is, if anybody has ever run any kind of marathon, ultra, you know, what are they called? Spartan races. Like they're demanding, you know, mentally, physically, emotionally. But you know, you are now needing to making sure that your blood sugar is at a good point before you go on your 20-mile run. What did I eat? How much insulin do I take? You know, and sometimes you just can't control it. You're trying to control something that is just almost uncontrollable. And but that was really, it was great for me to, I think I learned more about my diabetes and about my body and really tapped into the technology piece because it was really great to kind of be able to use that and then, you know, also learn my body better, which was great. So,
Right.
but yeah, you truly can do anything. Never let anybody tell you that you cannot. It's you I'm kind of living proof of that, which
Yeah,
I think a lot of people are, but
that's awesome. Well, so as a way to wrap up then, let's end with the question that we always, ask, our guests, and that is, looking ahead to the future, right? And a future that we all can't wait for. I mean, we've been talking about breakthrough T1D. Obviously, the vision is to create a world without type 1 diabetes. I mean, what would a world without T1D mean to you, Julianne?
oh man. I think I'd have my kind of own like shock. Like it'd be like kind of getting, it's like you're getting undiagnosed with diabetes. I think I would have the same amount of shock as someone who got diagnosed with diabetes later in life would be. I mean, oh my God, I don't even know if I could wrap my head around it. I think it would be incredible. I think it, you know, it's just I it's always been like so close for the years that we've been working on, and we've made so much progress. I really don't know if I could fully wrap my brain or never having to prick my finger again, never having to do, you know, a CGM insertion, never, you know, all of those things that you kind of have to get used to, like as a diabetic, and you know, all of the half the mental toll that I don't need to think about would be, oh my gosh, I think I would sleep. I think I'd sleep a little bit better at night for sure. You know, and I even knew you were going to ask this question too, but I just really don't. I just think of all of, you know, the little kids and anybody who kind of has had their world kind of turned around, like how great it would be to be able to go back to, you know, the normal that you had. But I think kind of, you know, to steal, you know, like I talked about the pandemic briefly, but it would definitely be a new normal for me. I really think I would not know how to. I'd be like, this is just what people do. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, people can eat a cheeseburger or eat Chinese food or eat pizza and they don't have to count the carbs or give a little bit of a boost later because all of the different things that you kind of have to worry about. I mean, oh my God, that would be crazy. You know, I think at the same time, like the amount of people that have come into my life, you know, because of diabetes is phenomenal. So I hope that, you know, we all can eventually, you know, not have this to bond over, but that we can still maintain our bond too. And I know that wasn't really a clear-cut answer, but I really like
No, I think it's
I honestly don't know. I haven't known anything else. So to be able to adjust to that and like that would just be it would be crazy. It would
right.
be
I mean,
crazy.
I love the way the first thing you said was, gosh, to be un get undiagnosed with type 1 diabetes. I hadn't heard it phrased quite that way,
Yeah.
but it would be, especially because this is the way you've lived your life. I mean, you got diagnosed at 14 months, or again, you don't know anything other than
Yeah.
this, right? So
Yeah.
it would be, for you, it will be as the equivalent or parallel to someone who's got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes at age 30, right? Now they have to change everything, right? And then they've been doing, all their lives. And it'll be
Right.
the same with you, but in reverse, right? Now it's like you don't
Yeah.
have to do all this other stuff that we've been, talking about this episode. But I think everyone would agree that it would certainly be a phenomenal day, for all of us. And hopefully, my hope is that it'll happen in my lifetime For you, for my daughter, for everyone who's living with this disease. And you're right, we're making some great progress, and that progress is accelerating. I know people have been, I know I speak to a lot of folks that have been living with the disease for 30, 40, 50, 60 years, right? And they said, when I first got diagnosed, people would say, oh, there's going to be a cure, sometime, in the not too distant future, and they've been waiting decades and it's still not here. But I think today, because of the advancements in technology, all the work that organizations like Breakthrough T1D is doing, and the partners it supports and so forth, definitely I can say that in the 11 years that I've been involved, excuse me, the 14 years since my daughter got diagnosed, I've seen exponential improvement and change in what's available out there. But Julianne, I mean, I think we could probably talk for hours and
You could
hours,
talk
but
for hours,
yes, but thank you very
it's
much for making the time to be with us today, and for sharing your story. So you've done a marathon. I mean, if you want, we can continue this conversation at Cape Cod during the Breakthrough T1D ride this September. I mean, what do you think?
Oh no. Be a good guy. That's there's always something that's going on, and I can't thank you enough for all the work that you do with with the rides and all of this, everything that Breakthrough does. I can't, as a researcher, someone who probably never would even have gone into healthcare, honestly, without her diabetes diagnosis, like I think about that regularly. When I really started my journey through careers, like I knew I wanted to, like my first job out of college was working at the Jaws and Diabetes Center. I was like, oh, I'm coming home. Like it was a really great opportunity. I can't stress, I know there's a lot going on, but I cannot stress, please keep, the research needs to stay alive. There's no other way that we're going to be able to, find anything new or create new advancements if we don't have the research. All the clinical care that we know and receive and the knowledge that we have comes from people who are doing the research in the labs. So, there's artificial pancreases are in play, there's all these different types of things. And I think, if there's to kind of sum it up, if there's I hope there's a cure. I really, really do. But I know that there's, again, like we said, we're close. We're close. We definitely are. Every day we are getting one step closer. And I know that that can seem cliche to some people, but if we can even make treatment or, management as easy as possible, I will even consider that a win as well. The ultimate goal obviously is a cure, but if we can keep finding ways to almost just to lift off that mental health, that mental burden that I think a lot of people deal with, which is great with what Breakthrough T1D does. So I'm not as talented on a bike as I am running. So we'll see
I
about
don't
that.
know.
But you never know.
I'll take that as a maybe, but I think you highlighted
Definitely a
some great
maybe.
points there, that it's not, there's a lot of great work being done, not only in finding a cure, but also in preventing onset or delaying onset, and also obviously
Huge,
in
huge, huge.
managing, the disease on a day-to-day basis. So a lot of advancements on all
Get
those
involved in your
fronts.
clinical trials, keep looking, keep asking. A bunch of institutions always are always having them. There's always, new grants coming in and stuff like that. So we're trying. We need you, trust me. We can't get any clinical, this is my career work coming out now, but we can't get anywhere without you. So if you're listening, definitely see if there's any kind of clinical trial that you can get involved in, because more info we get, the closer we are. So
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, again, thank you, Julianne. I want to thank those of you that joined us today. So if you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your family and friends. And if you're living the breakthrough with type 1 diabetes and want to share your story, feel free to contact me, and maybe you can be our next guest on Living the Breakthrough. Thank you very much, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode. Goodbye.